Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
Good evening. It is good to be with you this evening. And I appreciate, first of all, before we get started this evening, so much all the phone calls and messages and cards and visits and all the kind comments and prayers that you have sent my way regarding my, let's just say, back injury. And a lot of people have made a joke about how Chad, you're not spring chicken anymore. You're getting a little too old for things like this. And normally, on most other things, I would agree with you. Except this time, it didn't really have to do with how old I'm getting. It had to do with not just being very smart. And so this was a trampoline that was not even 24 inches high, but clearly designed for a child. And I was showing out with David, and, you know, David brings out a little bit of crazy in me, and we were having a good time, and I bounced down on my bottom and hit the floor instead of the trampoline, and the rest is history. And so I am very thankful, though, for all the support that you have shown me and my family. I appreciate that very much. And we're going to get to our topic here this evening. This month, we have been talking and been focusing on families in Him, capital H, families in God, and built the way that God would have us to build our families. We've had some wonderful topics by Andrew this week, or this month, as well as at our marriage seminar that we had. We had a marriage workshop here last weekend. Trey Morgan did an outstanding job. Andrew put that all together. It was a great reminder, not just of how husbands should treat wives and vice versa, but how we should be treating our families, the things that we need to look out for in our families. It was an excellent reminder. And tonight, I hope that that's what this is. I hope that this lesson will be a good reminder for you and to pick up some tips on the way about digital parenting, because we are parenting a digital generation of kids these days. And this applies not just to the parents in the group, not just if you have kids or teenagers. This applies to all of our great-grandparents, our grandparents in the crowd tonight. If you have any of those great-grandchildren, then this applies to you as well. Some would argue that this may be the hardest generation yet to parent kids because of the devices in our hands, because of the saturation of technology that we have in our lives. Kids are almost born with an iPad in their hands, it seems like, these days. Parents between the ages of about 28 to 42 right now really find themselves at ground zero, really dealing with everything that these kids are dealing with, that are, they're dealing with these battles first and foremost. Some of them don't understand the technology enough to protect their kids. And worse, they don't do the things and educate themselves to protect their children on these devices. They overlook it. They don't think that this is important. And so tonight's talk is not going to be about parenting necessarily, but digital parenting. And I've titled our lesson tonight, Analog Parents Teaching Digital Kids, because we are a generation, if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, of analog parents. And we are trying to teach a digital generation of kids. At the end of this month, I will be honored and privileged to conduct my 41st digital parenting workshop. 41st over the last 5 years. It was a workshop that started right here at Graymere, and it was started because Chris Webb asked me to come and do four lessons on four Wednesday nights back in 2014 to all the parents here at Graymere. And so that was something that started here, and it snowballed here, and so it's Graymere's fault that all of this stuff has happened. But I have had so many positive interactions over the past 4 to 5 years on those 40 digital parenting workshops that I've done. I have learned so much. Every single time I go to one of these workshops, I'm the one that's being taught. Because I may be giving out a lot of information, but I learn something new every single time. Andrew mentioned several times in the last few weeks a scripture that I have used at every digital parenting workshop over the past 5 years. And that is Psalm 127, verse 1. I'd like you to turn with me there. Psalm 127, verse 1. Like I said, I've used this at every workshop that I've had in the past 5 years, and it simply says this. The first part of that verse says, unless the Lord builds the house, unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. You ever tried to build something? I'm not a Hollis Carpenter. I'm not a John Compton or a Bobby Bishop in here. They can build marvelous things. You ever tried to build something, though? We were renovating some of these classrooms. We were painting. We were doing some things this summer. And it's easy sometimes to just kind of get in a fit and kind of go and do all these different things and buy some stuff. Well, we went and bought some shelves at Walmart. And we got some of these little cheap little shelves to put together. And it was like this little shoe rack thing. And I put this thing together. And together being a loose term. You put this thing together. I wasted 30 minutes and the thing was slanted. Okay? I'm not very good. I'm good at building websites. I'm not good at building actual things, okay? And this thing was a little bit slanted, and it just kind of would tip over with just the brush of your finger, right? It wasn't very stable at all. I wasted that time. I wasted that 30 minutes or an hour building that little shelf. And when we think about that prospect, if we as parents, we're going to waste our time if we neglect to teach our children about responsible digital citizenship. We've got to teach them how to be good citizens of God's kingdom. There's going to be teachers here at Graymere that assist us parents with that. But it's our job as parents to teach our children, first and foremost, to be good citizens of God's kingdom. Secondly, tonight, we need to teach our kids to be good digital citizens. I think that this verse says that if we forget one brick, one facet, if we overlook something or glaze over something or think something's not important, if we don't put all of the energy that we can into raising our kids and protecting them on these devices, then the whole rest of the house, the whole rest of the family, doesn't matter. It's going to be a waste of our time. And the second half of that verse, I think, tells us our responsibility as watchmen, as protectors. It says, unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. To make sure that the Lord watches over our families, to make sure that the Lord is watching over our children, even looking at these things and these devices that we're going to talk about tonight, we need to make sure that we are being vigilant. I tell parents every single time I go to these parenting seminars, I say, protect your kids and be relentless and intentional and vigilant about it. You can't ever let up. We all know, if you've ever been a parent, or if you are a parent, that it is a full-time job. And this almost adds a whole other layer of work to it. But it can be mastered. You can protect your children on these devices and your grandchildren as well. Let's take a little bit of a look and take a step back here before we kind of get started and look at a little bit of perspective. Let's talk about a little bit of perspective. Kids that have been born in the last 15 years, the last 15 to 18 years, okay? Think about that age range. I have a sister-in-law, Bonnie's much younger sister, who is 18, who went to Freed Hardeman as a college freshman this fall. She was born in 1999, okay? Some kids that are going to college this year were born after 2000. Now, if that doesn't make you feel old, that's pretty crazy. This is the first generation of college students that went to school as a freshman in the fall of 2018. They were first students born after the new millennium. These kids will never know a world without the internet. They'll never know a world without smartphones or social networks. They'll never know what dial-up is. They'll never know what America Online even means. They'll never know how to use a payphone. Think about that. They'll never know what it's not like to be not constantly connected. Think about this. As first generation of college students, they've never known the world without Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, constant internet access. And that means that the internet and these devices are all that they have known, all that they will continue to know for communicating, for news, information, and for entertainment. We have to think about that. That really blows my mind. The real issue is access. You see, we've had these temptations and these sins and these problems before. We've had temptations to do the wrong thing. We've had the temptation to fall in with the wrong crowd. We've had the temptation of pornography before. We've dealt with that for decades, but this is on a screen in our pocket. And the problem comes with access. You see, I use the phrase most of the time when I'm talking in these workshops that we are literally putting devices like iPhones and iPads into our children's hands, and they can literally access the wealth of all human knowledge. You think about that. These devices can access anything that they want. And what kind of boundaries do we have set for our children? Every child needs boundaries. We set boundaries in all sorts of areas of life. The Bible tells us about setting boundaries in all sorts of facets of life. But do we set our boundaries, and do we set those, put up those protective fences when it comes to this kind of technology? A few things I think we as parents, and I'm going to talk to the parents that are on ground zero right now. I'm going to talk to the parents that have young kids or teenagers right now. But a few things as parents that we need to do, we realize before we move on. And the number one thing is, I think we can never use the excuse that we didn't know. That is never going to be an excuse that we can use. Back in 2008, it was my first full, 2007, 2008 was my first full year of ministry. And I don't know if I just slept through David Powell's class at Freed Hardeman, or if I was not there for that week of that class at Preacher in His Work, was the title of the class where they talked about ministers and taxes. I don't know if I just skipped it all together, but I didn't know what implications that had. And my tax guy comes up to me in April, of course, of that year and says, "Hey, so you owe $4,000. And I've been married for 6 months, 7 months. I don't have any money. And so I had to figure that out, and it was resolved, obviously. But my excuse to the IRS was, "Well, I didn't know." How sympathetic do you think the IRS was? When we think about that, we can't ever use the excuse. Grandparents, we can't ever use the excuse. Parents, we can't ever use the excuse that we didn't know. "Well, you know, I didn't know that app did that. Well, I didn't know that that setting existed, that they could turn that off. I didn't know." We can't use that excuse, because it is our responsibility to educate ourselves. It is our responsibility to make sure that we are first and foremost protecting our children. An author put it this way in one of the books I read about digital parenting. He says, "Your lack of involvement will be to your child's detriment. Educate yourself." First and foremost, we need to educate ourselves. We can't use the excuse we didn't know. Number two, your child does not yet have the experience and willpower to keep themselves in check on the internet, on these devices. Okay? We know of adults that don't have the experience and willpower to keep themselves in check on the internet. So why are we going to trust a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old to do that? And I know where we go with this and what our thinking is behind this. I hear parents all the time say, "Well, I don't have to worry about my child. Well, I have a good kid. I know them. I know that they won't do the things that they're not supposed to do." I'm sure you do. I'm sure we all have wonderful kids. I see them all the time. I'm sure that we all have wonderful kids. But it's not your kids that I'm worried about. It's the other people's kids. It's the people's kids that are tempting your child to do things that they shouldn't do, to download things that they shouldn't download and look at things that they shouldn't look at. We need to make sure that we're guarding against those things as well. When we get that sense of complacency, and that's what that is, "Well, my child, I know my child is good and they won't do that." That's complacency. That's the devil speaking to us and saying, whispering in our ears a false sense of security. Now, we have to be relentless. We have to be vigilant on these things when we're talking about digital parenting. You know, we don't trust our children to drive cars in this society, because we as a society have determined that unless you're 16 years old and you pass certain tests and you do certain things and you're in a good standing with the law and you get this license, that you can't operate a motor vehicle, right? And we think about that requirement. We think about the things that we do for that. Why are we giving our 10-year-olds unlocked and unprotected iPhones, iPads, devices? Why are we not spending time with those devices before we give them to them? Some of us don't. Some of us have. Some of us don't understand that. Some of us need a reminder. We need to make sure that we've got those parental controls set. If you need help with those things, there are resources out there to help. I can be that resource. I can be I can answer some questions. And what I find out every time I go to one of these workshops is that I don't have all the answers. In fact, nobody does. And if they tell you that they do, then they're wrong. Because this is an ever-changing landscape, and we've got to stay on top of it as parents and grandparents. We need to be guides. We need to hold our children's hands. We hold their hands in every other aspect of life. We tell them, don't cross the road without mommy or daddy. We tell them to make sure they look both ways. Don't talk to strangers. We do all these things, but we kind of forget sometimes the device that they're holding in their hands. There's a lot of bad things that you can run into on the internet, and you can talk about a lot of those bad things, but there's more. Some of you might argue there's more bad on the internet than good. In fact, you may have seen statistics that say there's 60% of the internet is pornography. Well, that statistic is grossly inaccurate. It's somewhere between 0.04 and 0.06% of the internet. That's not the number that we need to be concerned with, though. The number that we need to be concerned with is the 1 in 5. 1 in 5 searches made on a mobile device are for pornography. And we can pick on pornography because it's right there and it's wrong and we know that it's wrong. But that's the kind of statistics that we should be worried about more. I'm not trying to scare you. I'm not trying to shock you necessarily. It's these things that we need to make sure that we know is out there. We need to make sure that we stay on top of it for our children's sake so that they don't see something that they're not supposed to see. The third thing I want to talk about, the thing that we as parents need to realize, is that there is no such thing as privacy. And we need to make sure that our children understand this, because our children's concept of privacy is nowhere to be found sometimes. We understand it because, again, the topic of the lesson, we are analog parents that grew up having to watch out for those things, but our kids, bless their hearts, are sometimes incredibly naive and trusting. And we have to educate them on these things. Privacy on any of these devices, on any of these apps and services that you use, is merely an illusion. And I'm here to tell you right now, and this is a scary thought, that anybody with the right tools and knowledge can get any information about you that they want. Some of you have had that experience. Snapchat is a application that is ubiquitous and everywhere with teenagers. The brother-in-law and sister-in-law, they're both at Freed Harbin, one's 21, one's 18 that I told you about before. It's nearly the only way that they communicate. They communicate via Snapchat. It's the way that 16 to 26-year-olds communicate. But parents, you need to make sure that you're looking for things in this application, as well as many other copycat applications that have tried to duplicate it as well. The thing about Snapchat at first was that the photos deleted after a certain number of seconds after the thing is sent, and you can't trace that. The worst part is that Snapchat is one of these apps that tells you, well, it's private. It's a private messaging app. The only problem is there's nothing private on any of these devices. When you think about that, when you think about this illusion of privacy, that's all it is. It's an illusion. When you think about somebody getting your data, I equate privacy, the idea of privacy on the internet, as to a bucket of feathers. And I wish I had a picture of a bucket of feathers up here. But if you take a bucket of feathers out on a windy day, what's going to happen? Those feathers they're going to go everywhere. Now the question is, how many of those feathers are you going to get back in that bucket? Are you going to get them all back? And the answer is probably absolutely not. And the illustration here is that when you put something out there, it is out there. And parents, we need to be teaching our children that privacy is an illusion. When you put something out on these devices, whether it be Snapchat or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or any of those different things that are popular, it is out there. One of my friends down in Mobile, who's a family minister down there, he came up with a phrase, public and permanent. When you put something out there, it is public and it is permanent. It is as public as you're on the town square shouting it from the rooftops, and it is permanent as etching it in a stone. That can be copied. It can be redistributed. It can be retransmitted. All sorts of different things. And the thing about privacy is we think we have privacy and we want to hide something. Well, Hebrews 4:13 tells us that there's no hiding anything from God. You can't hide anything. It says in that scripture, nothing is hidden from His sight. So even if we could hide things, even if teenagers could hide usage of their devices from their parents, or vice versa, or adults could hide usage from their church, or from their school, or from their friends, or from their own spouse, you can't hide it from God. You can't even hide it from the government. How are we going to hide it from God? And so we need to understand those different things. In fact, that scripture goes on to say that all will be naked and exposed to His sight. God sees all. And we need to make our kids understand that every little thing that's typed on those tiny little keyboards, every photo that's sent, everything that we do on these devices, we're going to be held accountable for as well. Andrew made an important statement last week when he talked about this. He talked about the disconnect that some of us have in our brains about this supposed privacy and about how we don't see that other person on the side of the conversation. We don't see that person as a human being. You've seen people and you know of examples of people saying awful, awful things to persons without any kind of genuine respect for that other person. We need to be teaching our children that that's not correct conduct. First of all, it's not correct conduct for Christians. And second of all, it's not correct conduct to be a good digital citizen on these applications and services. When we're talking about these social media apps and pictures and text messages, we have to make our kids see that other human being on the side, that human being was made in the image of God, just like they were. So moving into our next kind of section here, wrapping up what we're talking about this evening, I want to talk to you about being proactive. I want to use that word as kind of a jump start to the last part of our talk this evening. The best digital parenting advice that I can give is to be proactive. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's show the next picture up there. I love this picture. You may have seen this picture before. But this is Jacob, and y'all know Jacob. A lot of you that work in our special needs ministry, my heart goes right to you because I love you so much for working with our little Jacob. Our little Jacob is wonderful. He does all sorts of things. He loves, if you saw videos that Bonnie posted this weekend, he loves playing in the rain. And he's going to have plenty of opportunities for that this week, I guess. He loves playing in the rain. He loves swimming, okay? Probably those are probably connected, right? He loves swimming. He loves Captain America right now. He loves Captain America. The thing that he loves the most, and oddly enough, this is so funny, but the thing that he loves the most right now is going to stay in a hotel. I'm not joking. He's all the time saying, let's stay in hotel. You know, he's always saying that. And he's always wanting us to go to a hotel ever since we went to one this summer. But he is a normal little boy in every sense of everything that you look at, if you look at Jacob, except that he's not. And if you know Jacob's story, which you probably do, Jacob, shortly after he turned one, we had this suspicion that just something was wrong. You know how as a parent you get when you suspect that something is wrong. We could just tell that something was wrong. We took him to Vanderbilt where he was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. And naturally it was, the word that comes to mind is devastating to my wife and I. We didn't know how to deal with that. We didn't know what we were supposed to do. There were so many questions. Was he gonna be okay? What did the future hold to him? How are we going to raise an autistic child? And among these questions was just anger for me because I'm a man and I couldn't fix it. And it was sadness for my wife. But if y'all know anything about Jacob, Jacob turns 7 in October. And large in part due to the ladies that work in the special needs ministry here at Graymere, he is doing phenomenal. Both here at school, he is doing so much better than the doctors told us that he would when he was 1 or 2 years old. And the reason that those doctors and the nurses and the psychologists and the people that have worked with Jacob for years, the things that they have told us over and over and over again was because we were proactive in his treatment was the reason why he is doing so well now. They call it early intervention. Because we saw past our pride, because we saw past those things and got him checked and got him the help that he needed, that's the reason why he's doing so well. We need to have an attitude in our digital parenting of being proactive and not reactive. If we're going to be reactive in our digital parenting, then we're already a step behind. We need to be proactive. We need to be doing those things and setting up those parental controls, watching those YouTube videos to check those things, going to Apple.com or Google.com and figuring out how to work these devices and educating ourselves so that we can set up those things. We need to have a proactive approach, not a reactive approach. When we think about that, when we talk about being proactive, I think we talk about having a plan. You need to have a strategic plan for your family as it pertains to these devices. Because they're so prevalent, we communicate with them in so many different ways, we need to have a proactive plan. And I think that we need to teach our kids primarily that what we say matters. And I think that we can expand that to what we say matters, but what we post matters. What we like matters. What photos we send, those things matter. Those things are sending a message for us. Those things are speaking for us. And James has a lot to say about the tongue and a lot to say about what we say in James chapter 3. I want to read these few verses as we kind of wrap up our talk this evening. James chapter 3, verses 2 through 10, if you want to turn there with me. He says, "For we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, also able to bridle his whole body. If we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire, and the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, set on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who were made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so." James here compares our tongues, what we say, to three things. He compares it to a bit in a horse's mouth. He compares it to a rudder on a ship and a forest fire. This is a picture, I'll use one of those examples. This is a picture of a Nimitz-class aircraft carrier. It is a floating city with 3,100 officers and crew. It is 1,092 feet long. It's 400 feet wide. It displaces over 100,000 tons of water at full load. It can carry up to 118 various aircraft. After all, it is an aircraft carrier. The rudder that steers this ship is... how big would you think it might be? It's much smaller than this auditorium right here. In fact, it's probably not even as big as a large living room in your home. It's 30 feet by 20 feet, and there's only two rudders that are directing this entire 100,000-ton ship. If you think about that, it's exactly what James is talking about. He's talking about these ships that are great. That rudder is small. It directs the whole ship. Our tongues are small, but the weight that they carry is huge. It may be one of the smallest parts of our bodies, but it has a huge impact. Social media and any kind of these apps and services that our kids are on, that we're on, that we communicate on, that we talk on, that we put our rants on, that we put our complaints on, all these other things, it's given us a big microphone to broadcast our beliefs and our ideas and concerns and worries. But if you're not listening to your children, then social media might be listening to them. Somebody on social media is. It's incredibly important that we understand the impact of not just our words, as James says here, but the things that we post, the things that we tweet and like and share and all these other different things on social media. Kids these days live under the assumption that what they may type on that little keyboard doesn't correlate to real life, that it doesn't matter, that it doesn't have consequences what is said. And we need to educate our kids to know that everything that they do on these devices will and does have consequences. It was just this afternoon, and I'm not even joking about this, it was just this afternoon that I got a call from a youth minister working in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, who's dealing with the fallout from a Snapchat controversy between a young man and a young woman. That young man is probably going to serve some jail time for what he's done. We have to be educating our kids on this. Since the advent of the iPhone and screens in our pockets, it's become a little bit more difficult for that. And we don't need to be deceived in any of this. Most of these companies do not have our child or grandchild's best interests at heart. But I will tell you tonight, and all these things that I've said, you may think, well, this, I can't do this. There's no way that I can understand all these different things. Well, let me give you some tips this evening just to start with. Some tips as we end, just to start with. And if you've got kids at home in your home, if you've got young kids, older kids, these are really good starting points for you. And some of you may find yourself in various stages of preparation here. You may have done some of these things. You may have not thought of some of these things. You may have small kids. You may have bigger kids. Regardless of where you are, regardless of who you are, these things may help you. When you go home tonight, very simply, make a list of devices in your home that access the internet. Okay, now that sounds simple enough, right? Just get you one of those old school legal pads, the old yellow pads, and just put a line right down the center. And on that left column right there, you list all the devices in your home that can access the internet. And on that right side, you put what parental controls are set on those devices, if they are set. And you might be surprised at the list that you come up with. There are things that access the internet that you may have not even thought about. This is a good thing to do every 3 to 6 months. That second one right up there, have the child's device always in your sight. And I can hear the parents in the crowd going, yeah, right. Right? But at home, when that device is there, make sure you can always see that screen. Back when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, it used to be, well, don't let a child have a TV in your room. Don't let them have their TVs in their rooms. They'll watch terrible things on all 5 channels that they're getting, right? And you think about that. How many channels, how many different ways can kids find things on these devices these days? Especially if you don't have it locked down. Having that cell phone in their bedrooms, unsupervised, is very risky. The next one is super popular with kids. They love this one. Take up all the devices at bedtime. And the kids try to argue with this one. My favorite one is that I need to use the phone for my alarm clock. I love that one because I go, alarm clocks are $9 at Walmart. Go get you one and you can wake up the old-fashioned way like I did with the basketball buzzer, right? And you think about those things, most of the trouble that kids get into from outside sources and different things like that is from the hours of 3 to 5 in the afternoon and also from the hours of 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. Believe it or not, 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. is actually some of the worst hours that kids get in trouble. You don't need your kids to have that device in their room. It won't be popular. It will be a battle. But that's what you need to do. This next one is pretty unpleasant, but if you have reason to look for previous evidence, if you have a reason to believe that your child or somebody else that your child associates with may be influencing them to do something, you need to be keeping track of your child's movements online. You need to be keeping track of everything that they do on their device. You need to make sure that you know exactly what's happening on that device, and there are apps and services out there that you can use to do that. Life 360 is really good for drivers. If you have a driver in your family, it's like having LoJack on your teenager. It's great. You could also check out one, my mind's drawing a blank, fourparents.com is also a very good resource for parents, and they have an app suite that will work for you. You can type in parental control apps on Google and find a list of different things that you can just try out and make work to your advantage. Keep track of your child's movements. Beware of suspicious apps. You need to be taking your child's phone at irregular intervals and checking that phone physically and asking hard questions about what is this? What are you using this for? And things like that. And better yet, you should have something on there to lock that device down so that they can't even download those applications. Last but not least on this list, and the last thing we'll talk about this evening, is live life no differently than real life. And I've brought it up several times tonight, and I'll bring it up again. The big digital disconnect that we've talked about several times this evening is real. And the types of things that are typed on these tiny keyboards without the first thought of having the other person on the other line. James says, though, our words matter. Jesus says to treat others how you want to be treated. We have to make sure that our kids understand that. Biblical principles first will apply to this technology in nearly every situation. This may seem like a gauntlet. All this stuff that I've talked about tonight may seem like a big gauntlet. It may seem like it's impossible to navigate. It may seem like this insurmountable wall that you just can't seem to get yourselves over. But given enough dedication, no matter what age you are in this auditorium this evening, if you have great-grandchildren or if you're just starting out with children of your own, everyone can educate themselves on how to better protect their children. Most importantly, when we better protect our children in the digital space, we will naturally cultivate better citizens of God's kingdom. I'm convinced that with this technology, that our children and maybe even our children's children will be able to push forward the church and the God's kingdom in ways that we never could have imagined. In positive, wonderful, amazing ways. But that's only going to happen if we as parents and grandparents show them the way and we guide them. Tonight, if you are struggling, if you need prayers of the church, if you need to be a better parent, if you need to be a better digital parent, if you need to be a better parent to steer your child to God's kingdom, you can do that tonight. If you need to be baptized, if you need to become a child of God, if you've been debating that decision, if you need to be washed in the waters of baptism and say that I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, you can do that this evening. Why don't you come if you have any spiritual concerns this evening while we stand and while we sing?